and we dance sometimes because there's music. Well, hello and welcome to the unofficial Unreal Engine podcast, where we talk about all things Unreal Engine, also victory shrubs. We're your hosts. My name's Alex, and oh, we don't have Jacob this week. Jacob got pulled into work at the last minute, but I'm still very excited to have a guest host sitting in Jacob's chair. His name is Jonathan. We're going to learn a little bit more about him in a second. But before we start, everyone, please remember, like, rate, subscribe, all those things Jacob usually reminds you to do. And we are going to learn a little bit more about our guest today. We're going to start with our usual word association. But first, how are you doing, Jonathan?
What up, what up? Can't start a show without that.
I know, it's iconic. It's absolutely iconic. And anyone who has no idea what just went on there, you are in for a treat. We're going to start with some simple word association. I'm just going to say a thing, and you tell me the first thing comes to mind. There's no wrong answers. Ready?
Sure.
Home.
Work.
Work.
Fun.
Food.
Necessary.
Travel.
Well, can I say fun and kind of at the same time, you know, it gets kind of exhausting, but still fun.
Yes, absolutely. Virtual production.
I'm sorry, what was the last part?
Virtual production.
Very interesting and vast.
Fortnite.
My next, what do I say? Interest and obsession.
Unreal Engine.
My day-to-day life.
Love it. And how do you take your coffee?
Funny enough, with chocolate protein.
Chocolate protein. Is there a particular brand?
I do like Isopure, but, you know, whatever is good, whatever's on sale at Walmart, you know.
Nice. All right. We'll try to find a link to that and put it in the show notes. What's your favorite time of day?
Probably early in the morning. I'm an early bird. I wake up at like 5, 6 a.m. So, yeah, get a day started fast.
Oh, yeah. You also seem to have a really excellent workout routine. When does that usually happen?
Yeah, 5 or 6 a.m.
Yeah.
That's why I'm up early. So by the time I'm done working out, then the day's getting started for everybody else.
Yeah, I admire that a lot. I look forward to someday being able to follow a routine like that. That's very impressive. And lastly, when was the last time that you laughed or remember laughing in a big way?
I mean, we just laughed right now, right?
We did. What about like could have been physical comedy, someone fell over or someone told a ridiculous joke, or you couldn't believe something crazy that happened in the news?
Well, I will say, because I've been pushing Unreal Engine for motion graphics since around 2019,
yeah.
And I did get a lot of pushback. So once 5.4 preview came out, and everybody started hitting me up saying like, oh, I think I'm about to learn this Unreal thing, that, you know, big smile on my face. Like, I've only been saying it for the past 5 years, but, you know, barely than ever.
Yeah, exactly. I hear that. Great. Well, I think we're ready then for a proper introduction. So, Mr. Jonathan Winbush, thank you so much for coming on the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got here today?
Yeah. So for those who don't know who I am, my name is Jonathan Winbush. I often go by Winbush. I'm a multi-award-winning motion graphics artist based down here out of Southern California. I've worked with studios such as Marvel, DC, Happy Madison, Discovery, doing a wider range of things, mostly working in television shows and movies. So a lot of main title sequences for movies, a lot of TV show graphics, graphics packages. I worked a little bit in immersive, you know, doing VR. And then what else does that do? Because basically, if it has a screen, I'm designing and animating for it. You know, worked on a little bit of video games there, Lego Batman, Lego Harry Potter. Yeah. So
like kids love it.
Anything that has to do with 3D or motion graphics, I'm all about it.
And how did you come into that world?
I actually went to university for this. So funny enough, like I grew up a huge gamer, right? Like was at Tandy 1000 when I was a little kid, when it's just the black screen with the green type on it, and you had to do the printouts to play Dungeons and Dragons, like actually physically read and kind of use your imagination. But I've been gaming ever since then. I wanted to go to school for game art, like, because I wanted to work in video games. And the university actually rejected me. They said my drawing portfolio wasn't strong enough, but they had this other program called Motion Graphics VFX that was just starting up. This is the Art Institute. And so they said, why don't you do a semester here and there? And then maybe after a few semesters in this program, maybe you could transfer over to game art as you're working on your portfolio. But once I got into stuff like 3D Studio Max, Lightwave, Combustion, you know, After Effects. I kind of fell in love with the VFX and motion graphics part. So I just stuck through and got my bachelor's degree through that VFX program.
That's excellent. It's surprising how few people I've actually spoken to who properly trained in this. They're usually coming at it from some really weird angle. So it's great to be like, you can get an education for this, and here you are. How did you then find your way to Unreal Engine?
Yeah, like I said, I've had like a huge affinity for just all things video games. And I've actually, when I was doing VR stuff, I was actually working in Unity back then. This was probably around 2015, 2016, when the Oculus mainly was running through Unity for most of its VR stuff. And then when I worked at Warner Brothers on games like Lego Batman and Lego Harry Potter, what we used to do, because especially back then, auto rendering was CPU based. And so you could spend days render out just like a scene. So if we were working on a video game, we would actually, I'd bring my son down to the studio. He was young at that time, probably elementary school. He would be playing on the Xbox 360. We had a developer kit, and I would have the second controller, and I would be controlling the camera as he's doing his gameplay. So everything was real time. Like, it's not real time, but we kind of just brute forced it to make it work how we want it. Instead of going through and recreating the scenes or Maya and rendering them out, it's like, why not get the footage as it's meant to be intended? And ever since then, I'm just like, well, these game consoles can actually run 3D graphics pretty well in real time. Why can't I do that in my workstation? So I just like kept chasing this dragon of trying to figure out how to make real-time rendering work for what I do. And finally, you know, after a couple of years, Epic announced that they can natively take Cinema 4D files into Unreal Engine, and it just kind of exploded from there.
Yeah. Do you remember about what version of Unreal that was?
That would have been 4.24, I believe.
Gotcha. Yeah, so we probably came into it at around similar times, because the thing that really got me into it was Datasmith in general, and I was working with a lot of different 3D software and had struggled to get into Unreal Engine because of the fact that I felt like exporting an FBX and like trying to brute force it into Unreal was not a great workflow. And then Datasmith kind of smoothed this all out. And I suddenly felt like I could use all the other programs still and then integrate Unreal into that pipeline. But of course, now over the years, it kind of feels like Unreal Engine's becoming more of a one-stop shop where there's a lot of things it can do now that you used to have to do in other programs. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the analogy I like to use nowadays when people are asking, like, why do I use Unreal? And they always ask me, like, will it replace other programs like Maya or Cinema? And I don't think it's a replacement. It's just a part of the workflow. So the analogy I like to use is, think of, like, I'm a Cinema 4D user, right? So I say Cinema 4D is the actors in the production, and then Unreal Engine is the stage. Mm-hmm. And so you're setting up all your actors, all your scenes and everything in Cinema, but the main stage will be Unreal Engine, and that's where the final production happens at. So always think of it as in that manner, and you just kind of use them both together. You don't have to use one or the other.
Yeah, and I have to say, of course, congratulations on your thriving YouTube channel. I think you've become a real milestone in the community as someone who people look to for education, learning about new tools, especially things that are on the horizon. You were the first person who I saw posting in any meaningful way about Project Avalanche, which is now just called the motion graphics plugin for Unreal Engine. How did you kind of find your way past just creating the work yourself and actually falling a little bit more into education and trying to help the community?
Yeah, much like my career path, like, it kind of was a happy accident. So when I used to work at studios, you know, we would have the artist bullpen, and that way all the artists could just riff off each other. And I felt like that exploded my career. Like, you know, I went to university, got my bachelor's, but I always tell people the first 6 months of my career, I learned exponentially more in those 6 month period than I ever did at years at university. And that's just because you're thrown into the fire with other artists and you're quickly able to learn off each other. And so once I left Warner Brothers and I actually started working for myself, I kind of missed that, you know, that camaraderie that you have with the other artists around you, because I had nobody to share this information with. And a lot of times, a lot of artists would actually hit me up and they would say, like, hey, Wimbush, do you know how to do X, Y, Z? And a lot of times when I'm working, I would actually just screen capture my sessions, because if I figure something out, I might need that for another project further down the line. Like, there's been many a times where, like, I work on a project from a client and the issue would come up and I'm like, I know I just figured this out, but for whatever reason, I can't remember the steps I took. So I always would record my session if I ran into an issue, just so I had something to revert back to if that did happen. So a lot of times I would send those recordings over to my friends. If it pop up, I'd just say like, hey, let me get my archive and I'll send that over to you. And sooner or later, after a couple of years, they were like, how come you just don't put this stuff on YouTube? Like, why do we have to keep asking you for these files to see if you figure something out? So I started doing that. I didn't really take it serious at first. So my first couple of videos are kind of cringy, but there was a lot of people from around the world that would leave comments and they were encouraging. And they just said like, hey, we love what you're doing. Keep it up. And it kind of just happened from there. So like I said, it was kind of just a happy accident. Like I never went out to be a YouTuber. It's just one of those things that just kind of happened.
Yeah. I'm not going to embarrass you by actually playing one of your older videos, but impressive to see that your second oldest video, which is called Ocean Test Render using Cinema 4D, Hot 40 and Octane Render, that got 6,000 views. That was only the second video you'd ever put on your channel. And then it just kind of went up from there. And then by the time we have your 7th video, After Effects, this effect requires GPU acceleration fix. That's over 100,000 views, and it just feels like you are off to the races.
Yeah, that After Effects one is kind of what really set it off. Because before that, I did that 360 video with Metal. They were doing the 360 plugins with After Effects for VR stuff. And I dabbled a little bit, and I was often doing tutorials for other people's channels too, you know, just kind of helping people out. But after I put that After Effects one up, that one kind of exploded, and then I just kept it rolling from there.
Yeah. So you already mentioned some of the cons of going off and working on your own. You don't have as much of like a thriving community that you're learning from and working with. It feels like you've built some of that back up through your YouTube channel and your teaching. What are some of the other things you've noticed about the differences between being freelance, you know, a free agent working on your own versus being in a more corporate structure?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of pros, but there's also a lot of cons, because like this is something that I had to learn to do, was you have to know when to shut it off. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times I'll work on multiple projects at once. Like I don't like just having one project. Like I like being able to have multiple clients and having multiple projects at once just to keep everything moving. And a lot of times, you know, you're working into the late hours. I could work easily till like 1, 2 a.m. and I was burning myself out. You know, after a couple of years of that, you kind of get the burnout. You just stop doing everything altogether. Then you come back into it. But definitely, it was a life lesson. You just have to learn, okay, these are my office hours. Because I am at home, it's hard to shut that off and say like, okay, 7 o'clock, all work is done. Go out with the family or go play video games or go do whatever else. But just know you have to take time for yourself.
Yeah. Do you, how methodically is your day structured? We already talked about you wake up early, you do a workout, and then do you have like certain times you take meetings and certain times you answer emails and certain times where you do production, or does that all kind of get mixed up over the course of the day leading up till say 7 p.m.?
Yeah. So everything is kind of random, which I kind of like. It's like that, it's organized chaos, I like to say, but you know, like I wake up early in the morning, I'll go work out. Like, whenever I'm checking emails in the morning, I like just walking on a treadmill. I'm not much of a runner, but I will walk. So while I'm on my phone checking and responding to emails, I'll just, you know, be on a treadmill, get maybe a mile or two in, because after 30 minutes, that's usually like a mile and a half. Plus, I'm a big proponent on getting 20,000 steps a day. So right there, that's already like 6,000 steps without even thinking about it, because you're looking at your phone and you're doing whatever. And that right there get you a big start in the day. And then from there, you know, just make some coffee and do what else, or do whatever else I have to do, and just kind of let the day, you know, take it where it's going to be. And then late in the afternoon is when I usually do lifting and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And how does some of that change when you travel? It's been fun following kind of your travelogue. I've seen a lot of great pictures of you going kind of all over the world lately. And I think that might've been why you missed Unreal Fest last year, right? I think you were somewhere else.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I was, where was I? I think I was in Europe at that point, just heading up to go over to Europe. So, yeah, it's really bummed out. I couldn't make that work, but hopefully at Unreal Fest this year. But, yeah, when you're traveling, that's, like, traveling the world, that's new to me. Like, I've traveled different places, but never away for 3 weeks like that. So that was something that was, again, just a learning experience on how to handle that, because all your time zones are going to be all over the place. So it's just one of those things that I just made work. I had a really good working laptop with me, so I still was able to do client work at the hotel and stuff. But yeah, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything, because it's definitely worth it in the end.
Yeah. And just to tell people a little bit more about these travels, are you doing like private training? Are you doing production work? Oh, I froze. What kind of, what's taking you on these travels from place to place?
Yeah, so it's a combination of things. Like last year, I was on the design and animation tour. I got the headline that tour. So we traveled through United States, Canada. Myself, I went over to Seoul, Korea, and then we did Eastern Europe as a group. And so that was a part of that tour. So the way that tour was structured was there's three artists that were the main headliners, me, EJ, and Chris Schmidt.
Oh, nice.
There were other 40 artists. But what we do is we take 45 minutes each. We would do either like a keynote, or for me, I like doing live presentations, like jumping into cinema, jumping into Unreal, and just showing people how to do stuff. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that 45 minutes, do, you know, maybe like a 10, 15 minute Q&A. And after that, after everybody's done presenting, then we would do a panel talk to try to give local talent a time to shine too as well, which is really cool. So we do a panel talk with a bunch of local artists, get them up there, speak for an hour, and we just hit like a pub or something for the after party after that. So that pretty much was last year. And then also do private talks. Like I did a keynote talk down at Ryland University down there in Tampa last month, and headline a Future Proof conference for them. So that, just wherever there's opportunities, I'm definitely jumping to take you.
That's excellent. Yeah. And then how do you decide when a trip is worth it versus like, it's, you know, not going to really be worth my time, considering I'm going to be away from my family and I'm going to kind of break up my routine and all that? Because we know travel can be exhausting.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not going to lie. I take everything that's thrown my way for the most
part. Good for you. Yeah. I wish I could do that. You have to say no sometimes. Yeah.
And they, like, I'm starting to feel bad. Like this NAB, I just literally came back from NAB last night. So since that was covered for hotel and travel, I ended up bringing my wife and daughter with me this time too. So it's not like I'm always leaving and coming back. I'm like, you know, if this is Vegas, it's a few hours away. We haven't been out as a family in a while. So why don't we go enjoy the weekend and stuff like that? So try to involve them whenever I can.
Yeah. Last week on the podcast, Jacob and I were talking about a recent trip I did to Ringling College in Florida. And it was one of the scenarios where I was going to say no. I was like, yeah, I really can't spare, you know, a few days of my time just to go and do some things at this one college. And they were kind of like, well, how can we kind of make it worth your while? And I was like, business development? Are there like some companies I can meet with there? No. You know what? It's my six-year-old spring break. Can I bring him with me? And they said, yeah, sure. So he just kind of followed me around all day and got to, like, you know, see me do some talks and some impromptu lectures. And it was a good time.
Yeah, that's awesome. You got the, that was through Ed, right?
That was what? Sorry?
That was through Ed down at Ringling?
No, it was through Martin Murphy. I actually don't know who Ed is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess Ed would be the head of motion. Were you down there for the immersive stuff then?
Yeah, because they've got like a full-on virtual reality department now. So I got to speak at a character animation class, a technical artist class, and like a thesis, you know, all sorts of different Unreal Engine project class.
Yeah, now that university is pretty nice. Like I said, I was down there for a week and did some workshops down there as well. Like those kids down there, they, I was telling them, I'm like, they're ready for the industry. Like they're student reels that I was looking at and critiquing, I'm like, they're way ahead where I was at that time. So yeah, they're coming.
Yeah, they're doing great work. I'd love to talk for a moment about NAB. This is an event that I've only ever gone to the New York version. Even that version is pretty huge. It's the Javits Center, but I know it doesn't even compare to what happens in Las Vegas. Have you been before? How was this year? What was exciting to you? Would love a recap.
Yeah, no, so I've gone every year that it's been open since about 2016.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've been usually go there to speak at different booths and stuff like that. Like, I've spoken at AMD's booth in the past, Maxon a couple of times, PGen Systems. So, a lot of times I'm there to speak and give presentations, but it's, yeah, it's great. Like, I look forward to it every year because it's one of those world events where a lot of people from all over the world come to conglomerate, and you get to see a lot of people that you only get to speak to online. So it's a good time to catch up with everybody.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds fantastic. Was there anything being announced? Like, and this is, I'll ask this very much as like a someone who hasn't done enough research in NAB. What would you say the big draw of NAB is? What makes people want to go to it?
Yeah. So it's mostly for the broadcast world, I would say. And so, like, you know, a lot of camera equipment stuff. So you have Blackmagic, Alexa, all those big broadcasters here, Braz, VCRT, you know, those type of systems. So if you're in the broadcast world at all, or doing motion graphics or CG, it's the place for you to be at. I would say the big thing that I saw was, of course, you know, AI was all over the place. Like, I can't think of the one company's name, but they had a text to motion capture prompt thing, which I thought was interesting. So instead of doing, you know, motion capture like I do with the suit or now with the phone and stuff like that, you can actually type in your prompt of what you want the motion capture to be, and it will give you back an FBX data of that exact thing, which I, it's cool and scary, but at the same time, not going to lie. And then, you know, Adobe announced their integration with AI into Premiere, which that was kind of interesting to see. So yeah, a lot of AI talk this year.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I did actually just talk recently to a company that had a text to mocap workflow, and I'm trying to see if I can find the email with them. The other product they had, which was interesting, was kind of a modded version of the Unreal Engine VCam, where that kind of had these other layers where it could match with Digital Twin. But it's interesting to see companies using AI and some of these tools in new ways. In some ways, it's scary. In other ways, it's very exciting. Do you have kind of a general philosophy on, you know, what AI is doing and coming to the industry, or do you take it as it comes?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of take it as it comes, but I'm also like, there's stuff that I'm excited about, but then excuse me, I'm trying to be respectful of the different industries that are out there as well, because, you know, in my industry, everybody was in an uproar with Midjourney and then OpenSura being able to do video work and graphics works and things of that nature. But then a lot of my colleagues, they get excited for stuff like the text, the motion capture prompts. But then I have a lot of motion capture friends that's what they do professionally. So they look at it as like, hey, this is going to take our job. So no matter what, there's always going to be somebody that's affected by it. So that's why I kind of try to be sensitive when showing my excitement or talking about this stuff, because stuff that I'm excited about, I have to think like, oh yeah, there is a professional on the other side that this might affect in some type of way.
Yeah. I just wish that this was all coming from a place where the sourcing for all the AI material was tracked. And so it would be so great if there was like a micropayment system where it's like, you know, I'm having whatever ChatGPT or any other program creating motion graphics for me, and 0.05% of this training came from Winbush's data, and therefore, you know, you're getting like a tiny little payout, but there's thousands of people who are also doing that. And so, you know, it'd be great if that could be like a nice little income stream for everyone who especially publicly shares tutorials, education, work on ArtStation, because right now it feels like no one's being compensated for anything.
Yeah, funny enough, like, because I use, like, Copilot and stuff like that whenever I'm trying to come up with maybe, like, YouTube titles or descriptions to go in the description box. And a lot of time, whenever, you know, it'll give me suggestions, it will say where it's sourced from. And, like, more than likely, this stuff is being sourced from my own YouTube channel, which is crazy, because it will show you the videos that it's pulling from, and it will give you, like, a full pop-up of the video. And I'm like, man, it's pulling from my stuff right there.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's crazy. How are you feeling about Unreal Engine in general, where it's going? I'll tell you one thing we've been debating back and forth on the podcast for a bit is, do you feel like Epic right now is putting a lot more resources into Fortnite and UEFN? And it'd be nice if we saw a little more of that going toward 5.4, or do you feel like 5.4 and the general roadmap of Unreal Engine is in a good place?
Yeah, it's tough because I guess we could openly speak about it. You know, we had the layoffs last year and everything up there at Epic, and a lot of those teams got hit really hard. Yeah. Like, you know, we were talking about Avalanche earlier, which is now just motion design. That whole team got wiped out. There's only like two or three people left there.
Yeah,
I know whole sectors that got wiped out. So it's just they're taking a little bit longer to get what they need done over there just because they don't have as many resources as they did before the layoffs, right? And so even I know at Unreal Fest, you know, Tim Sweeney said there was going to be a lot of focus into UEFN. But from what I've been hearing, like a lot of the stuff that, you know, they're working on the UEFN is going to become Unreal proper at some point. Like I think Tim even put out there on a tweet that by Unreal 6, it's just going to be one Unreal Engine. It's not going to be separated UEFN or Unreal Engine 5. Like, it would just be Unreal 6. So even like Verse Code will be incorporated into that. And it's just going to be one single platform. So right now, I think they're just trying to figure everything out. But I can see where it looks like Fortnite's getting more of the resources because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's their bread and butter, right? That's what's driving monetization for them. And that's where they're getting their money from.
Yeah. What finally made me feel like I needed to jump into UEFN proper was the announcements about metahumans coming to Fortnite. And especially when they're like, you know, we knew because Fortnite has a 400 megabyte upload limit that we had to get the size of metahumans down because, of course, they can be 1.7 gigabytes per metahuman. And so then it's like, yes, here's a great looking metahuman. It's 60 megabytes. It's running awesome in Fortnite. It can accept live link data and all this mocap data. And there's no way to get that over to Unreal. There's no way to get that 60 megabyte metahuman over to Unreal. It can only live in Fortnite right now.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know.
I mean, that goes to show that, like you're saying, like metahuman was Unreal proper only before, but now it's in Fortnite. So that's, I mean, it's showing that they're trying to figure out how to bridge the two together. So right now, you can't take it from UEFN to Unreal, but who's to say that's always going to be the case, right? Like, I know they're really trying to make these tools available for everybody to be able to use.
Yeah. Hopefully it's right on the horizon. Anything else in well, I want to dive kind of deep into the motion design stuff, but anything else in 5.4 on the roadmap for Unreal Engine that you're excited about?
Yeah, I think it might be public knowledge or maybe not. I'm not sure, but the VCamp stuff, I know you said something about it earlier, but right now it's only iOS, but there is, I'll just say now there's hints of it coming to Android devices. Cause I know anytime I've done like any VCam stuff in the past, all the comments down below are when's Android. So I think people are going to be excited. That's if I know I've been told personally, but I think it might be on a roadmap as well.
Yeah.
If not, then sorry.
I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, that's one of the big ones that.
Yeah, I think you're okay because there's definitely been a lot of vocal pushes. There it is. Yeah. Hold on. I'll share it on the screen behind us. Don't worry, you're not in trouble. Here's our share screen. Yeah, so we got Live Link VCam for Android. The companion app in Editor Virtual Camera System is coming to Android. Yeah, this was posted back in October 2023, and it is on the 5.4 roadmap, so hopefully it will be out any day now, you know, if you're keeping up with source builds and all that. Similarly, I think we're seeing something like that happening with the Live Link as well. I think Live Link is actually Live Link Face is going to be coming to Android at some point as well. So that is much appreciated.
Yeah, another VCam stuff we had talked about. I went to an Epic event at NAB, and that was one of the things they had brought up. So that's what I'm like, I thought I heard about it before, but like the past month has been a blur. So I'm just like trying to go back in my memory. Like I thought I saw it online before, but maybe it was just at the event. But yeah, good to see it's on a proper roadmap.
Yeah. All right. So now I'd love to just hear. So the whole thing that prompted us wanting to get you on the podcast was Jacob and I were chatting the other week about how excited we both are about the motion design tool coming. But we realized that neither of us have had any time at all to dive into them. I've known about these tools for a year and a half now. I've seen little private demos of them and thought, I can't wait to play with this. And somehow I still haven't even touched them. But everything you're putting out about it looks amazing. So I would love to hear you explain to me, like I'm five, you know, what are these tools? How are they working? How do they compare to After Effects and some of the other things out there? And where do you hope they're going from here?
Yeah. Yeah. So the proper name for it now is Motion Design.
Right.
So Unreal Motion Design, it's a module that you can find inside of 5.4, which is in preview right now. I've given it a couple more weeks. I know they're working out a bug. So once 5.4 proper comes out, all the bugs should be out. But if you don't know what it is, basically it's a motion graphics companion for Unreal Engine. So a lot of motion graphics artists were used to working in platforms such as like Cinema 4D, After Effects, and the typical workflow is you would build out your motion graphics 3D stuff inside of Cinema. You would export out using some type of AOV pass. So you would have a render pass, and then you would composite those inside of After Effects and maybe do some 2D stuff on there and get everything looking really nice. But with that workflow, it could take a couple of days, you know, for rendering, and even like the VRAM previews inside of After Effects are kind of slow there. So what they have now, instead of Unreal using the real-time technology, it's a combination of Cinema 4D and Unreal, or not Unreal Engine, but a combination of Cinema 4D and After Effects. So you don't have to worry about rendering out in 3D and then maybe compositing stuff in After Effects to do some 2D type stuff. Like everything is just all inside of one package. And they even inside the module, it will actually change the interface. So it makes it look a lot more familiar to people that actually used to work in like Cinema 4D and After Effects. So right now it's a good start. I try to remind people this is round one. You know, this is round one of what this tool is going to be. And they're taking a lot of feedback from the community out there. So it's only going to get better. But as of right now, it's not a replacement for Cinema or After Effects, but it's getting in a good position to actually be, you know, someone that's going to be out there in the field as a competitor.
That's great. Yeah. And are there still instances where you would be like, yeah, I'm not even going to try to do that in Unreal Engine? You'll still go back to the tools you're familiar with?
Only because it's in preview right now. So there are some caveats, like when you get to render stuff out, it'll keep saying like compiling shaders over and over again. I know that's a bug. So there are some bugs in there. And, you know, even when you download preview, it'll say these aren't production ready. So just use these to kind of get yourself acclimated and familiar with the tool set. But once it comes out proper, I can see myself using it a lot more for client work.
Great. That's really exciting. And do you know if something you create with the motion design tools will work in virtual reality, or are they limited to just kind of like what you can do in sequence and output with like the movie render queue?
Yeah, so it's to my understanding that everything, that's the reason they built it inside of Unreal and not like a standalone thing, is so that it will work with everything in there. So if you, like I just did a recent tutorial on how to make like a futuristic HUD,
right?
No keyframes at all. And that's all just procedurally animated within the, it's called Operator Stack, and they have animator plugins in there that will allow you to do several different types of animations, and you don't have to use the sequencer at all. So when people ask me like, hey, can I use this during runtime inside of my game? It's like, yeah, you can actually use that in runtime because it's not reliant on the sequencer at all. Like you're seeing right there, like that's all animated and no keyframes or anything. It's just all procedurally built. So there's a lot of cool stuff in there that I think even the game dev side is going to, you know, have a lot of fun with.
Yeah, that's the $1 million question. I know some people feel like the UMG, the widget system in Unreal Engine, is a little rusty. Do you see the motion design tools getting to a place where you can almost do all of your UMG stuff with the motion design tools?
Yeah, I think that's the plan, to bring it into UMD instead of using UMG. So the design stuff is going to be where you're going to want to go for a lot of that.
That's great. Yeah, because I'm just trying to remember, does UMG stand for Unreal Motion Graphics? That can't be right.
Is that what that stands
for?
No,
it can't be, because they're not in motion. Yeah, I just realized I have no idea what that acronym is actually for.
I don't either. I know what it is, but yeah, now that I think about it, I have no idea what that even stands for.
Yeah, I think it's Unreal something graphics, but probably not motion. That's hilarious. Well, this is a really lovely chat. Something we try to do in every podcast when we can, Winbush. It feels weird calling you Winbush because I still refer to you to other people as Jonathan, but it is a cool name. Is there anyone you would like to shout out in the community, maybe someone who you think isn't getting enough attention, who's doing cool work or making other cool tutorials that people should go check out if they like you and the work you do?
Yeah, no, give a big shout out to Legged Penny. A lot of people might know him as Hollow Woodsman on social media there. He's been working as a contractor at Epic for the past couple of months, but he's one of those people that actually I met when I was doing a course in 4.25. He took my course and he just went off to the races. And a lot of times now I'm actually asking him for help when I get stuck in Unreal. Like he just got that deep into it and became a really close friend. Like we just, you know, been talking on Discord and helping each other out, and it's been cool learning this stuff alongside with them. So big shout out to Logan Penny. I do want to shout out my brothers there that I went on tour with. So his name is EJ, aka iDesign on YouTube. He's mostly a Cinema 4D artist, but he does characters, and more recently he's been making characters in the physical form. So he's been getting into vinyl printing, he's been making plushies and doing all types of cool stuff, just kind of showing artists that you don't only have to work on a computer, like the stuff you're making on the computer, you can release out in physical world as well, which has been really cool to see there as well. And then Yeah, my buddy Chris Schmidt, the other person I was on tour with, he's a programmer, actually trying to get him into Unreal Engine because he makes a lot of plugins for Cinema 4D. And with the motion design tools now, I think he could really flourish over there. So yeah, big shout out to Chris Schmidt.
That's awesome. We're going to get all these awesome names and a few links from Winbush, including all of your socials. And so look for those in the show notes. My shout out for the week is David Lee at the CPPPM. He just posted a GDC talk that he gave that's all about the latest Visual Studio update for game developers and tips and tricks for GitHub Copilot. And there's a big chunk of it that goes over using Visual Studio and GitHub Copilot for Unreal Engine. And I learned a ton from that. So, you know, look forward to that link as well. Two final questions for you, Winbush. First would be, what's a dream project for you? Something that you would love to work on someday?
Okay. So since you asked, I'm going to put this out in the universe.
Yeah, do it.
They over at EA, they're working on this open world Black Panther video game. And I'm not a game dev, but I've done motion graphics for games in the past. So even if I'm just, you know, animating the Black Panther logo, that would be more than enough for me. I just want to be a part of the project. I missed out on the movies by just, I forget what I was doing, but I never got a chance to work on the first movie, which kind of bummed me off. So working on a video game would be, you know, the next big thing there. And was that a two-part question or just...
I said there were two final questions. I haven't told you the second one yet. But yeah, thank you for putting that out there. I mean, I hope everyone who didn't already know you and wasn't already familiar with your work is frantically looking at your portfolio now and seeing all the ways that you could help them with their project. And if it's a video game, if it's Black Panther, this open world version, I've actually heard about this one. This is different from the Marvel 1949 one.
Yeah, so they announced this one last year. There's been no screenshots or no gameplay or anything out. They just they announced that they're working over at EA. They built like a studio around this open world Black Panther game. I can't remember when it's slated to come out, but from what I've been hearing, it's actually sounding pretty cool.
That sounds amazing. I would be thrilled if you get to work on that and get to take your skills over to that world. The final question is, where would you like to see these tools, the industry, et cetera, in 5 to 10 years? What do you hope the trajectory of all this is headed toward?
Yeah, so I know right now there's a lot of uncertainty, especially we were dealing with the strikes last year. You know, I've been affected by strikes. A couple of TV shows got canceled that I supposed to work on. We have the Teamsters that are threatening to strike. So I know a lot of times artists are kind of scrambling for, when do I get my next job? How do I make money? So with this creator, I'm not even sure what the term would be, you know, like places like Roblox, places like Fortnite, where we could take our skill set, bring it over there, create some experiences and maybe make some side cash. Like, I would really love to see that amplified so that if an artist finds themselves in this type of predicament again, they're not totally stuck. Like, they're not relying on talent or on clients. They can actually say like, hey, I have some downtime. Let me create a side project. And, you know, there's 5 million players at any given time on Fortnite. So I know if I build an experience, he has a good opportunity to get exposure, get seen, and maybe make some money over there as well. So I just love for artists to take their career more inside of their hands and do, you know, experiment with these places that are actually able to make them some money. Because I hate to see, you know, friends and people online just struggling because the client work might have dried up or the budgets might have dried up. Like, there's other ways that we can make money. So hopefully we can amplify that in the future for everybody.
Yeah, I love that perspective. Well, thanks again so much for your time, Jonathan Winbush. You can find him on a lot of the socials at Jonathan Winbush. I'll have a few links in the show notes. And lastly, is there, I guess it's three questions. Is there anything left unsaid that you would just like to say to the broader community out there, Unreal Engine and beyond?
Yeah, no, definitely love the support, especially this past couple of months ever since we're able to properly start doing tutorials and the motion design stuff. Like, it's been a while. Like, I've slowly started seeing my YouTube channel explode.
Yeah,
I usually don't fix, but I have TubeBuddy and it sends me a notification every time I hit a milestone, which is like 1,000 followers. And first it was like every couple of days. Usually I get 1,000 a month, maybe somewhere around there, maybe less. But first it was happening like every 4 days I noticed it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. People are excited. Then every 3 days, then every 2 days. And now it's like every day I'm getting 1,000 followers, which is nuts. Like, I don't even know how to react to it, but it's been really cool to see how excited everybody's been reacting to the new motion tools. So definitely thank everybody out there. It's definitely appreciated. So my next goal is to get that 100,000 subscriber platform YouTube. That'd be really dope to see.
Do you have a place picked out? I know everyone can't see your awesome office right now, but do you know where you're going to put it when you get it?
Yeah, right next to my arcade cabinet there. That's where I spend a lot of time. So yeah, right there.
That's so cool. Well, geez. Thanks again, Jonathan Winbush. You're an incredible boon for the community. I think you represent so much of where people want to get to, and just the amount that you give back to us all is really gratifying, and I'm grateful for it. Everyone's grateful for it. And thanks, of course, for coming on the show and having this lovely chat. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you asked me to come on. It's fun.
Yeah. Till next time.
Awesome. Take care, everybody.